Infamous Indy presents the Digging Up Dillinger Project, featuring the Texas Crime Travelers and Travis Thompson. I'm your host, Joe Malone. In the annals of American crime, few figures loom as large as John Dillinger. A mastermind of bank heists, his name became synonymous with brazen robberies and daring escapes. Questions of whether he escaped an FBI ambush and the whereabouts of his buried loot persevere. History offers one account, but there are whispers that tell us many more. Join us as we go digging up Dillinger. Hey everybody, welcome to the next episode of Digging Up Dillinger. I'm your host, Joe Malillo, and with me the team, Stuart Fillmore, Travis Thompson, and Todd Hiles. What's up, guys?
What's up?
Hey.
Welcome, everybody.
We're back at it. Another episode. Last time we left you, we talked about the Fillmore Report. We introduced you to the ear discrepancies from the autopsy with Stuart. Stuart, any thoughts after we did that podcast now coming into this podcast as we continue on to your down your report?
You know, just to emphasize that that was the one thing that when I first started looking into this possibility of this imposter theory, which I didn't really buy. I had heard it before. You know, I had no reason to doubt that, you know, that the FBI got Dillinger. But the more I looked into it, the more there were just these unanswered questions that just seemed to be fairly significant, frankly. And then, like I said, I studied the pictures of him in the morgue, you know, just to say, you know, could this be an imposter? You know, I know there was the plastic surgery on him and everything, but I could not quite determine what it was that was really standing out to me that just didn't fit. And it was the ears. And so I did a deep dive on the ears. I looked into them. I briefly thought at one point that it could have been just to be graphic. I think I mentioned this before, you know, that when during the autopsy and the skull is removed, the skull cap is removed, you know, the face is pulled down and it's pulled down all around the skull cap. You know, that could have maybe when they put the head back, it could have, the ears might not have gone back correctly, but you know, the ears are laying flat against the head, whereas Dillinger's ears kind of puffed out. And then on the side, you know, the whatever the angle of the ear was different. Like yeah, Dillinger's was backwards. Back. It was, yeah. Exactly. So it's not going to change that much, you know, in this autopsy procedure. So it's hard to fake ears. You know, you can do the.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like a fingerprint, really.
And Todd, you know, you're kind of seeing this stuff. I know Stuart has told you about it, but you're seeing this stuff with us kind of for the first time. What was your thoughts after we stopped recording with the ears?
You know, I think looking at the side-by-side photos really does it. You know, again, to our listeners, Stuart does a great job of explaining it. But when you actually see those photos, to me, that's when you notice the difference between Dillinger and the body at the morgue.
And it's so weird because Travis has those ears. No, I don't know. Actually, I don't know if he does. Travis, do you think you have those ears?
Yeah, I've been told that I have the Dillinger ear.
Well, you know, the Dillinger ears right behind you, dude.
Yeah, put your hands down. Let's do this. Put your hands down. Yeah, and turn sideways. Yep. I'm telling
there
you,
it
it's
is.
Not,
there it
it's
is.
Not too far off.
It's nearly not.
And it's right behind him, too.
Yeah, I was told, especially when the newsreel of my great-grandfather talking, my other grandmother was like, you have your great-grandfather's ears.
Isn't that funny, dude? Isn't that funny? We're so excited you guys are back to listen to another podcast here. It's a 50-50 shot if I call it the project, the Digging Up Dillinger Project, or the Digging Up Dillinger Podcast. They're both correct. There's no wrong answers here. But just to be clear, you know, I would start betting on which one I call it every episode because it's a crapshoot. It's a 50-50.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But there is a difference. And I think one real thing that I want to mention again is this is different. This is a project because it's different. This isn't just a podcast that we're doing to talk about this stuff. We really want to change history. We want to make a dent in whether or not this is the truth. And we're going to look into it. And that means that we're going to have projects, aka things outside of the podcast that we'll talk about on Bring It Back to You All about what we're doing outside. One of the things that we've done the last couple of days since we last recorded was we've been looking up, I could tell the guys, Stuart, Travis, Todd, myself, we've all been looking up documentaries. We've gone back into YouTube and dove into different documentaries. We've also been talking on via text message about certain things and kind of going into great detail on text message between us. And all of it is to gain knowledge to each other, for each other, so that we're able to correctly investigate this mystery. So just know on the back end, we're all still working during the week to kind of do the research and investigate. And literally, because Stuart and Todd are private investigators, licensed private investigators, you know, they investigate all the time. And, you know, I'm just here for the ride, right, guys? I'm just here to look at you guys and you guys tell me what's up.
You're the celebrity here, though, so that's important.
There we go.
I am part of the Morgan County Boys and Girls Club celebrity golf outing every year because I was once on television at one point. I play with Pacers. I play with the Colts. Sometimes there's IndyCar. It's, you know, IndyCar season right now. I got my...
It has its perks, man.
It does. I knew one day I'd make it, and it was the Morgan County Boys and Girls Club celebrity golf outing. So thanks for listening to my rant there. Just want to make sure everybody understands we want your community to support us because we're trying to do big things. Okay. Next part here of the report. I'm really excited to share this, so I'm gonna share our screen here.
Before we jump into it, again, remind our listeners that the Fillmore report was written by Stuart Fillmore.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I don't understand is I see that front page and it says written by Stuart Fillmore. Stuart, why don't you go by a cool initial like the cool FBI agents? Why aren't you like R. Stuart Fillmore? Like J. Edgar Hoover.
Middle name, Stuart?
Well, actually, when you go into the bureau, they let you choose your official bureau name. And actually, Stuart is my middle name. And, my first name is John. And so but I've never in my life gone by John. I made it my official bureau name was J. Stuart Fillmore. So maybe a nod to J. Edgar, but not really.
Oh,
how come
my
when
God.
You went in, you didn't call yourself J. Dillinger's Fillmore? You could pick your name how you want it on your credentials.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think it had to be some semblance of your real name, but
it's like a stage name.
Yeah.
So J. Stuart Fillmore report is on the screen for all those who are listening to the podcast, maybe in your car. This episode, we're going to go into, we did the years, and I'm scrolling down now into part two of the Fillmore report of autopsy discrepancies. So I'm going to quickly read this cold, by the way. Haven't read this yet before, but other than to myself while reading the report. But autopsy discrepancies include the official autopsy was performed by Dr. Jerome J.J. Kearns of the Cook County Morgue on July 23, 1934, a few hours after the shooting. Several discrepancies between the known physical characteristics of John Dillinger and the autopsy findings were first observed and described by author J. Robert Nash in his book, Dillinger, Dead or Alive, in 1970. There were several differences in height, weight, and appearance in the autopsy. Regarding the appearance, Dillinger had a distinct cleft in his chin. For those, check out Travis's cleft. We can see it now. He shaved this week, so you can see it. The body on the table had no cleft in the chin. Also, two moles Dillinger is known to have were not present or described. This is not inconsistent with the known procedures performed during the plastic surgery operation. Also, the hair and mustache had been dyed black and the eyebrows were trimmed and shaped differently. These discrepancies can be reasonably explained, of course. The height and weight differences were not significant and could be attributed to any number of factors. The missing moles and the cleft chin can be attributed to plastic surgery performed on Dillinger. The dyed hair, dyed mustache, and trimmed eyebrows are consistent with a wanted person attempting to disguise themselves. There are, however, several significant discrepancies that are much more suspicious and more difficult to reasonably explain. These discrepancies are the next thing we'll talk about after we talk about the height. So the height and weight and these cleft chin and the moles, Stuart, talk about where you got that information. How did you determine that? You can hear yourself saying, basically, it can be all explained.
So in the FBI, the the FBI has the file on Dillinger, and Travis actually has a full copy of it. I have a full copy of it. Within that FBI file is the autopsy report. It's like a 4-page document that's fairly descriptive. Honestly, you know, like any autopsy, it gives a description of the body. You know, a general description. You know, it's looks to be a 30-year-old white male. You know, who appears to be well fed, well nourished, muscular. You know, however the general description is, and it noted, you know, that the body had brown scalp hair, but that it clearly had been dyed black, and the mustache was dyed black. The eyebrows had been reshaped, and that, you know, at least in the description, there was no mole described on the face. I'm not sure if an autopsy would even describe a mole anyway, but nonetheless, the moles were not described in the autopsy report. And, you know, and I'm not sure also, too, if you had, at least in the general description, if an autopsy would describe a cleft chin. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't, but nonetheless, it wasn't described in this report, and Dillinger was known to have had that.
Pictures tell its own words too, or tell its own story too.
Yeah. Now, the murder cases that I've worked as a private investigator, I mean, there's so many autopsy photos taken, and there's some from so many different angles that, you know, to give a clear picture of. Because, you know, you can write the autopsy report, but you know, what is it? A picture's worth 1,000 words. If autopsy photos were taken of Dillinger, I've never been able to find any. Nothing refers to it in the FBI file, so I'm just going to assume that they did not take autopsy photos in those days. I don't know.
So what are the photos that we have from the ear report, part of the report?
So there were pictures taken of Dillinger in the morgue. On the table, you know, I think, the media was allowed in. It was kind of a circus, actually. They got pictures of him from a lot of different angles. And so I've tried to look at all the ones I could find, you know, from all angles. That's what I'm trying to do, and compare with pictures of Dillinger when he was alive.
Right, right. There's a few, actually, I found another picture of him in the morgue. These moles, do you find it too concerning about the discrepancies? I mean, the height and weight, how much was the height and weight differences too?
I forget the weight. He was he was listed as 5'7", and maybe the body on the table was 5'8", 5'9". A 2-inch discrepancy could be significant. But a lot, you know, I don't know. It to me, the differences, and I'm forgetting the numbers offhand exactly what they were, the height and weight, but they just to me didn't seem significant. They just seemed, you know, somewhat minor.
Look at this picture that I found. What a ridiculous picture.
Yeah.
So
actually, those are two showgirls. I actually knew their names at one time. They were there in pretty skimpy bathing suits for the day.
I mean, it's real, you know, skimpy for the day.
Yes.
Very. Hey, let our listeners know what picture we're looking at.
I mean, it's a picture of John Dillinger on what looks like a table of some sort. And like through a window, people are viewing his body as he's kind of covered up. And he doesn't look like himself. Like my first thought is like, that does not look like him. Right.
Well, again, it's, you know, it's any time that someone is dead, they don't look like themselves.
I know, I know.
And, you know, it looks like this, you know, I can't quite, I don't think they embalmed him at the morgue. I think that was later. But, you know, when someone's embalmed, they can look a little maybe swollen, you know, and so they, you know, again, they just don't look right. Something's different.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely didn't look right.
But you can tell, I think I mentioned this last week, there are a couple of photos you can see of Dillinger in the morgue. He's clearly dead, but he still had a somewhat of a natural look you know, he, so you can tell it that the pictures were taken pretty quickly, I would bet, after he was killed.
Yeah.
You know, just looking at that picture again, it makes you wonder, why did they even let the public come in and look at that?
Todd, you know, I mean, you know, this is not 1934 was not too removed from the Old West. And, you know, in the Old West, when they caught the bad guy, the whole town and the posse would prop the corpse of the bad guy up and they'd all stand with it like it was a trophy. So, you know, I don't think that times had changed that much into 1934.
It's pretty crazy to see a line of people looking at the body as they go through. But he was a celebrity, right?
He absolutely was a celebrity, yes.
Yeah. So it definitely fits the way he ended. Hey, Travis, did your grandma ever tell you stories about that moment at, you know, when they're bringing him home, and that weren't there parades, or weren't there people dying to view it?
Yeah, there's a lot of people. I mean, they had to have a whole, they moved it to the, I'm trying to think, Audrey's house for a little bit, and then they moved him to Mooresville, and there was huge crowds in the street, people surrounding the building. Just like when the actual funeral service was done, there were thousands of people in the street and around the cemetery.
Yeah, and it was like a torrential rainstorm too, but the crowds hung around for it.
Was it hot? July?
That's one of the things that we'll probably get into on other aspects of these autopsy discrepancies. That Chicago was experiencing a heat wave that week. I want to say it was maybe around 100 degrees that day, you know, July 22nd. And having lived, I lived in Chicago for 3 years myself, and I can tell you it can get pretty damn hot. It can get balls ass hot in the summer. Not like Texas, where we have it, you know, all the way into October, but it can actually get hot. So, you know, and that was one reason that, in addition to being a movie buff, I think that they'd gone to the movie just to cool off. Because in those days, you know, movie theaters, you know, had air conditioning, and most people did not, you know, in their homes.
Yeah, that movie theater was a rare one because it did have air. There wasn't many Chicago at that time that had air.
It said ice fresh air as its advertisement. Yeah. Ice fresh air.
A big selling point.
Yeah, could. Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds like something I would want to.
That's one reason why in that picture of the body in the morgue, how people are dressed like in t-shirts and their undershirts, because of how hot it was.
Yep.
So to conclude this portion, these discrepancies, which are the fact that the height and weight were different, the scars and the moles.
Yeah.
We're going to, if I had to vote on which half that I believed in, whether it was him or not him, I'd say this one's arguing that it is him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, like I said, if that was all it was, I wouldn't be convinced whatsoever.
Right, right.
Yeah. So no, I don't find those discrepancies compelling at all.
Well, in that case, I think we're ready for another really, really good one. So we're gonna move to the next part then of the eye color.
Yeah.
Okay, Stuart, what do you think?
So, you know, again, this is one of those things where it could just be attributed to a mistake by the pathologist, by Dr. Kearns, you know, that he just, I don't know, maybe the lighting was bad in the autopsy room, you know, one of those things. And I will say this, and Todd and Travis, I know you agree with me on this, that there's no investigation that doesn't have anomalies or unanswered questions or just something that you never really find an answer to. You know, this just, you know, might be it. But the thing about it is that Dillinger is described as having just such unique gray eyes, I would describe them as super light blue eyes. And there's several reports of that he just had striking eyes. So, you know, maybe if he had hazel eyes or green eyes, you might in the right lighting could mistake that for brown eyes. But, you know, it's going to be hard to, I think, to make that mistake of light colored bluish eyes for brown eyes. And, you know, so one of the things when we go into the heat wave is that some many people have made an argument that the eyes just turn brown because of the heat.
And where did he have his eye color officially put down?
Well, he was arrested a couple of times. You know, he was arrested in Dayton, Ohio. He was arrested in Tucson, Arizona, you know, and he brought back to Crown Point. So there's physical descriptions of him in those arrest reports. I think there's also a description in his Navy records, you know, because he was briefly in the Navy. And in all circumstances, it's described as, you know, blue eyes or gray eyes.
That's a crazy description. This gray eyes. I mean, it's a very unique color, as you say in the mm-hmm. report. But it's also the Navy records too here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Travis, I got a question.
Yes,
dude. Has anybody else in your family ever had gray eyes?
My dad has. I would say the closest resembling eyes to that.
Yeah,
I mean, I got brown eyes. So
you got what?
I got brown eyes.
Well, then you're probably the dead guy. So I think it's a good point too. Stuart, something that comes to mind here is when they're looking at the autopsy or when they're performing the autopsy, are they using a flashlight? Like, you know what I mean? You think they would?
Hard to say. Yeah, you know, like
how could they mess up is my point.
To give the benefit of the doubt, it just could have possibly been poor lighting. You know, maybe in those days, you know, a typical autopsy, they didn't consider eye color an important aspect of it. You know, but again, I don't honestly know how new autopsy science was at that point and what the specific protocols were for it, like it is today. You know, so it just to the pathologist, it just might not have seemed like a big deal, and he just took a really quick look and goes, "Oh, those are brown eyes." And so, you know, it could be something as simple as that, you know, to account for it.
One of the rationale and one of the things that people might guess is, hey, it was hot, he was moving, he was bloated, he was, you know, decaying.
Well, yeah, and it's by the time you get to the autopsy, it's several hours later, you know, after he was shot, and so.
Could he have bloodshot eyes?
Well,
because he was shot through the face right here.
Well, yeah, but it actually the bullet came out just below the eye. I think the eye itself was undamaged.
Okay, yeah. I'm just trying. I'm playing super devil's
advocate. Yeah, and bloodshot eyes. That doesn't affect the iris. Where we describe the color of the eye. That's in the. I think it's called the sclera. The white part of the eye, that's where you see bloodshot eyes. So
yeah,
you know, your meaning of that is not that he was out drunk. It's that he had been shot, and could the gunshot have affected it?
Yeah, and not to mention, you know, when someone has like a bloody eye, right? That
yeah,
the capillaries.
Right.
I
see what you're saying. Yeah, and so you see, you know, could that blood maybe have gotten into the iris and kind of. Obscured the real color, but again, and it's not specific in the report. You know, you would presume that he looked at both eyes, but you know, he might have just looked at the right eye real quickly, and maybe that Joe could actually account for it. You know, if there was, I'm sure there probably was some kind of bleeding or contusion in that eye.
Well, I'm trying to say, like, let's put everything out on the table here.
Yeah,
on,
absolutely.
Like, any theory at this point. And with your guys' expertise, I think there's no doubt that we have at least a shot to come up with an excuse for this. Because let's face it, like, I want to argue for him too, or like that it is him. Because, you know, if we could argue, you got, you know, reasonable doubt, right? Leave no reasonable doubt that it's him. So,
well, I have something to bring. Well, maybe if the FBI was scared that they really got the wrong guy. Would there be a lot of pressure from any agents that are on scene to push this doctor to hurry through an autopsy report to get that done?
And well, mistakes can be made during the haste.
Absolutely, they can. And I'll tell you, I've never actually heard of that in the Dillinger case, but I'm actually doing quite a bit of research right now into the John F. Kennedy assassination, and that an outside influence, without a doubt, and by that I mean non-pathologist present at the autopsy of JFK, absolutely had an effect, and we're actually giving orders to the pathologist as the autopsy was going on. So, you know, so it has happened, and it definitely can affect the quality of the autopsy.
That's why I'm kind of curious, because, you know, if they're waiting for identification, Audrey said yes, and I'm kind of wondering if it truly isn't him, did Audrey just go ahead and be like, yes, that's him, just to settle it with the FBI and everyone has seen, hey, it's finally over. They think they got him.
Right.
When the father shows up and says, no, that's not him.
Right.
I'm kind of wondering, like, how fast did this report get done?
So let's talk about real quick, you know, that let's presume something that it was an imposter, and that, you know, this was planned. Dillinger somehow, and someone that was helping him, found this patsy, if you will, that looked like him enough. Somehow the patsy was convinced to, I don't know, you know, befriend this Anna Sage, and, you know, that he looked enough like Dillinger that, you know, they were able to do this. If that happened, I would presume, Travis, knowing how well that John loved his family and his family loved him, there's no doubt about that, you know, probably the family would have known about it, you know, or maybe, you know, certainly Audrey, because John was close to Audrey, you know, you know, maybe he let her know, or somehow it was, you know, she already knew about it. You know, again, we don't have any confirmation of that, but it is reasonable that if this was a planned thing, that probably someone in the family would have known about it.
How quickly did the family get up there to Chicago that night?
I'm not 100% sure. Grandma never got it down to details about how fast. Like I said, Audrey was the first one up there. So how fast, where she was at the time when she got notified, I would say, you know, probably 3-4 hours at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, from Indianapolis to Chicago, it's right about close to 3 hours now. I'm thinking probably about 4 hours after notification. And by that time, who knows what had been discussed before any family members could get up there.
Right.
When you say they would have known about a patsy, what do you mean by that? Like, you mean they would have got up, John would have called them and said, hey, I'm not going to die?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because he's going to need, he was very close to his family. He loved his family. You know, there's no doubt about that. And he was able to sneak into the family farm right under a 24-hour FBI surveillance. So he felt safe there. He probably felt safer at that farm than anywhere on the planet. And so it would make sense that if the world thinks he's dead, then he would probably be far easier to sneak back to the farm, and then could maybe use that just as a base of operations to do whatever he was going to do to start a new life.
Stuart, I would agree with you that the family had known. And this will come up later in this investigation, like what the family did, the pictures they took, and how they acted after that's going to show up. That reason why I've always thought there's something fishy, some odd about how the family acted and posed with stuff. That's why it's always kind of pushed me to believe that it wasn't him in Chicago.
Nice, Travis. Keep them on their toes out here. Keep them on the edge of their seat. Travis is good. Let me just read this, because I think this part's good. Several recent studies were reviewed regarding post-mortem eye color changes. From my review of the findings, these studies consistently concluded that no significant changes in eye color occur to the iris, which is the portion of the eye that gives color, after death until decomposition begins. This includes testing done in different temperatures. However, there is a phenomenon known as the corneal opacity.
Corneal? Mm-hmm. Opacity?
Opacity. Or corneal clouding, mm-hmm. The cornea is the clear covering of the eye. Postmortem, the cornea will cloud or become opaque. This clouding begins shortly after death and increases steadily as the time of death increases. Heavily clouding of the cornea can make it difficult to see the specific color, iris eye color. Also, after death, the muscles of the iris may relax, which is can cause fully dilated pupils. Pupil dilation could further complicate the iris color identification. That's a good argument.
Yep, absolutely. It could be, you know, again, like you said, a combination of a contusion on the eye and then fully relaxed pupils. At first glance, could have just said, oh, those are brown eyes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then you have actual pictures of a body postmortem with blue, gray-blue eyes.
Yep.
And you can see 5 hours, 16 hours, and 27 hours postmortem.
Yep.
That's pretty...
And really, you can see from left to right, you can see that, you know, what they're calling that opaque opacity or opaqueness, you know, of the cornea. But you can still tell that it's a blue eye, even, you know, at that length of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately the timeline doesn't really answer, John Dillinger's timeline of the autopsy, you know, postmortem, that it wouldn't have clouded up that quickly.
No.
You could see 27 hours postmortem, and the autopsy was how many hours after?
Just a few hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I will say one thing to this that just came to my memory of what my grandma said.
When my grandfather
was in that room, he said when the FBI agents were not paying attention, he touched and examined the body some. He did look around the body. So I other than just that detail, I'm not sure, like, did that happen after or before he went to the side room? I'm not sure. Grandma didn't really elaborate on that. But if he would have examined it on his own just real quickly and realized there was stuff missing that he would have known about, that might have been why he's like, this isn't my son.
I'm stumped. I could go either way at this point.
Yeah.
I really could. I mean, yeah. I want to believe it's not him.
Again, there's explanation, you know, and as I've said before, in any case that I've ever worked, I'm always looking for what are the weak spots of my case? Are the initial allegations wrong that I got? Is the evidence not bearing out what I thought it did? I'm constantly critiquing that. And I just applied the same thing to this. You know, I always want to know, is there an explanation? There could be a logical explanation as to why the doctor, you know, said brown eyes instead of blue.
Yep. Thank you, Stuart. This is great.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Great job.
Yeah. This report is incredible. So if our viewers and our listeners would like a copy of this report, what I'm going to do is we're going to have the email campaign that you can sign up for. If you write in the notes, you would like a Dillinger report, I can send you them via email. So all you have to do is sign up for our email newsletter and we'll send you a report and you could look at this stuff yourself and read everything that Stuart did. So Stuart, get ready to get demolished by our listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can already see it now. This guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
this guy's drinking too much.
But I will tell you, I am perfectly open to critique, and I'm not so committed to this that I will not admit that, hey, that's a reasonable explanation. This works. This doesn't work. I'm wide open to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just glad that we're being transparent with the viewers about every evidence, anything we have in our possession that we can bring to the public, because someone else might have a better idea than what we have because we've been so immersed in this.
Exactly.
Right. And there may be an explanation for the ears.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
That there could be one out there.
Yeah, just contact us and we'll send you a copy and you can look at the ears yourself. There's guys, we're not done. We're not even halfway into this report.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm looking at it here. There's a few good ones. And we're gonna try to keep going here and also work to try to get some experts for maybe possibly some other forms of discrepancies from the autopsy. We're having a blast. This is really fun. We have a group text that just blows up when we find something. We're like, guys, look at this. Look at this. So we're hoping you're having a good time too, listening to us. Any kind of last thoughts here on you know, the moles, the height, the weight, the eyes?
You know, this may not be for everybody, but, you know, I enjoy, you know, talking about these kind of details and getting in the weeds on this kind of stuff. And, you know, talking about autopsies and gunshots. And
you don't say, and, Stuart. You don't say, yeah. Dude. You know, really? You like that? You like that? There's no way. I can't believe it.
Hey, guys, I've ridden to lunch with him, and I've ridden back to the office with him. He's exactly right. This is what he talks about.
You're such a nerd.
Usually during lunch.
Case, if it's not this case, it's 25 other cases.
Yep. And usually during lunch.
I could sell a ticket to have lunch with Stuart. People would pay for that.
And speaking of, we do have a Patreon page. If you feel like trying to win an opportunity to have lunch with Stuart, we might do that.
Hey, yeah, absolutely.
It'll be It'll be a Zoom lunch, and it might be just whiskey, but you know what? At least you get to ask Stuart anything you want.
There you go. So,
like, subscribe, comment, share. We got Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. We do have a Patreon account if you do, and that email campaign, I kind of offered that up today. If anybody would like the Fillmore report, we'll send it to you. Just put it in the notes, and I'll make sure to try to get it to you. You guys are great. Thank you all. Thanks for the community. Travis, Stewart, Todd, love you guys. Thank you.
Love it. Thank you, guys.
See y'all.
The Digging Up Dillinger podcast is produced by Joe Melillo and Grace Hiles. Theme music produced by Eddie Bandis. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, keep digging.